Okay, we're now going to be starting the interview with Paul Schrade. It's still the 15th of July, and we'll be starting with camera roll 41. Our first take will be take one, and that's what comes next.
Really angry because he's highly intelligent. Camera roll. Speaking.
Roman.
Marker.
A little lower, David.
Lower. Marker, take one.
Paul. Mr. Ruther sent you into Stockton 6263. What were the circumstances? Why were you there? Why were you sent out there?
Well, Ruther and me had different ideas about organizing. Ruther really wanted major organizing effort in the country. And one of the organizing efforts was in the San Joaquin Valley. And he asked me to go to Stockton because he was concerned that Meany was going to end the drive among farm workers. And Ruther passionate about organizing farm workers, it's been his whole life, and felt we could be helpful. So I went to Stockton to meet with Al Green, who was heading the drive at that point, the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, along with Norm Smith, who I believe came out of the CIO. And so I went there and went into the office and sat down, and Al Green was immediately called out of the office for a phone call. He came back in and he said, kind of chuckling, he said, well, to Norm, he says, you won't believe this, but that was a call from Bill Schnitzer, who was number two to George Meany as Secretary of Treasury of the AFL-CIO. And he said, this is the first phone call we've ever had from Washington about this drive. They've got some sort of peculiar interest in it, the fact that you're here, Paul. So that, in a way, I think was helpful because the drive wasn't ended. And Ruther kept the pressure on to keep the drive going.
What was going on between the UAW and the AFL-CIO between Ruther and Meany? Was there some kind of a competition, some friction there?
Well, there was on certain issues. The merger took place at the AFL and CIO, led by Ruther for the CIO in 1955. And during this period, Ruther did everything possible to get along. But there were disagreements on how to put unions together behind major organizing efforts. Meany just didn't seem to be that interested in organizing at all, and particularly farm workers. He didn't think farm workers would ever be organized. But Ruther wanted to make the try and felt organizing was important. So that was one thing. There, in the civil rights movement in 1963, UAW was a major supporter of the March on Washington, where Martin Luther King made his I Have a Dream speech. And Meany condemned that, saying, there'll be blood in the street, this is a communist tactic, and so forth, and refused to support it. But a lot of unions got involved in it, and Ruther played a major role in not only in that effort, but also in introducing Martin Luther King to President Kennedy.
Now, what was Meany's attitude? I mean, did he on the farm workers, what did he just basically write them off as impossible to organize?
That's generally it. Although,
what's generally it?
That he thought that they couldn't be organized and didn't want to spend the money. We pointed out that he was spending millions of AFL-CIO dues money in third world countries organizing against workers, setting up fascist dictatorships. And he was working with the federal government and big corporations in this country doing that. We argued you ought to be doing something about farm workers here. And, you know, we have our peasants, too, who are mistreated and underpaid and overworked. We ought to be doing that. So it really got into a very strained situation between Ruther and Meany over that kind of thing.
But apparently you and Caesar were able to kind of capitalize on that. Could you tell us that story?
Well, in 65, during the AFL-CIO convention in San Francisco, we had a hell of a job trying to get a resolution on the floor in support of the grape strike and in favor of farm worker organizing. But we finally did. And we were setting up a trip for Ruther to Delano out of San Francisco, along with the National Labor Media people, to make the farm workers' effort a national issue. And I never give up on things. And I went to George Meany on the platform one day, which is not the usual thing for people to do, and said, Mr. Meany, Walter's going down to Delano tomorrow and would like to know if you would like to join us. We're chartering a plane and to give some support based upon the resolution we just passed. He says, oh, no, I'm going to be busy. I can't do that. I said, would you send a letter? And he said, yeah, work it out with Lane. Lane Kirkland is administrative assistant. So I went to Lane and told him this, and he got angry. He says, well, it's your idea. You write the letter. So I wrote a UAW-style letter in support of the farm workers and got it signed by George Meany, which Reuther presented the next day or so in Delano at the Filipino Hall. And my main reason for doing this was to show some solidarity, even though I knew that Meany wasn't fully supporting what we were doing, and that this kind of symbolized that we were all together.
But along the way, this AFL-UAW competition, I mean, you and Cesar were able to do some interesting competition here to actually raise the ante and to raise contributions.
Yeah, well, there are two organizations at this point. Chavez heading the National Farm Workers Association, and Larry Itliong, along with Al Green, the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, AWOC. And we knew that this division had to end at some point. So going into Delano in December of 65, I think it was December 16th, with Reuther showing his support for the efforts, we had decided to make a contribution and split it between the two organizations. We also found out later that Cesar, in his own beautiful strategic way, had assigned Wendy Gopal and Jim Drake, I guess Manuel Chavez, to us to sort of guide us into this position, which is fine because we'd already decided it was a good idea. And so when Reuther announced a $5,000 contribution, it would be to split between the two organizations. And since it was Christmas season, another $5,000 because of that. So the first $5,000 for it was on a monthly basis for the length of the strike. And so this is the kind of thing that began to attract attention from the AFL-CIO. Al Green was being confronted by Reuther and by Chavez about the efforts of the AFL-CIO. And this caught the attention of Bill Kircher, who was then the national organizing director for George Meany and the AFL-CIO. And there were a lot of old competitive situations between Kircher and Reuther, Kircher and Jack Conway, who was part of our team, and myself. We all had very serious personal problems with Kircher. Well, Kircher, as the organizing director, saw Reuther taking the initiative there, and he felt that the AFL-CIO ought to be involved. And I believe he convinced George Meany to make a better effort. And as we made further contributions to the effort by bringing people in, by helping fund the organizing drive, and promoting Chavez as the real leader of the organization, this helped the AFL-CIO come to better decisions about what they ought to be doing. So we kept anting up, and they kept coming back in. And I think a lot of it had to do with very personal problems between Kircher and those of us on the Chavez team. It was that kind of thing that helped build the organization. And it's one of the things that Chavez understood. He would not play one group against the other, but he could see competing groups wanting to be involved and getting both of them or all of them to come in behind the effort, and it helped the farm workers struggle a lot.
Well, in your opinion, what do you think of Cesar as a strategist?
Excellent. I learned a lot from him. I thought I was pretty good, and I thought Reuther was pretty good.
I'm going to ask if you can include this to just know the context, my question, your answer, so we know we're talking about strategy. What do you think about Cesar as a strategist?
I think Cesar was an excellent strategist. And that's proven over the years and his history with organizing the farm workers. And I thought we were pretty good, you know, Reuther and Conway and myself and organizing strategies in our big industries. But we saw him as a primary strategist and doing some things that had never been done before.
Okay. Now, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit here. In 1965, 40 feet, let's stop right here. I want to get into your first visit to Vallejo.
Mm-hmm.
Start talking about Vallejo.
Okay, that's take one. Take two's next. Okay, that's the end of camera roll 41. 42 will be next, and we'll be starting camera roll 42 with take two. Contact between Dolores and...
Rolling.
Marker, take two.
Well, what were your initial thoughts about what Caesar was trying to do, organizing farm workers? Do you think he could pull it off?
Didn't know. Didn't know much about him or what he was trying to do, but we learned that. And learned
did you
it.
Learned what? I'm
not... Learned, you know, we learned an awful lot about Chavez very early, just in meeting with him and talking to people about him, seeing what forces were reigned around him and against him. And in beginning to understand him, we quickly came to a decision that his goals were our goals and that he was a good strategist.
What were the circumstances leading to your first visit to Vallejo? I believe it was in 1965. What took you there?
Well, it was probably in October. We were holding, our union was holding a meeting, the UAW was holding a meeting in Fresno, and Roy Ruther came out from Detroit to speak to our meeting. And Ann Draper was the first person that actually tried to recruit me into the farm workers movement, as she did in the anti-war movement. And she was an organizer for the Amalgamated Clothing Workers and knew Chavez. And she told Roy and me, you've got to meet this guy and find out what he's doing and see if you can give him some support. So I remember that very rainy, stormy night in Ann's old car driving from Fresno to Delano. We made some contacts there, and I don't know whom we talked, but Chavez was not around. He said later that he wasn't in town, but I suspect that he was in town and didn't want to meet with us because he always wanted to be prepared. And see, you know, and he might have had some anxiety about meeting with Roy and first national labor leader to come to Delano and wanted to be prepared to meet with him. So we didn't see him that night. We did see some people, but we went back to Fresno. And later on, I met with him. I'm not quite sure when, but our major exposure to Caesar was when we brought Walter Ruther into Delano on December 16 of 65 after the AFL-CIO convention.
What happened then?
Well, we had a major media turnout, which is really what we wanted. We were using Walter for that, and that's the way he wanted it. Because farm worker struggle was not a national issue at that time, but it became one practically overnight. And so we went to Filipino Hall, and there's a major rally that AWOC and NFWA had organized, a joint effort. And Walter was greeted with great excitement. And he said, look, this is not your strike, this is our strike, and set that theme. And then announced that the UAW would contribute $5,000 monthly to the end of the strike, and another $5,000 as a Christmas gift from auto workers' families around the country. And that was greeted with a lot of excitement as well, because they're working on a very small budget and very poor people and poor organizations. As a result of that meeting, Cesar and Larry asked us to go out and visit one of the warehouses in the city of Delano, not far from Filipino Hall, to see the picketing operation. Well, we went, and a large group of people from the union and our delegation. And as we got there, the police began buzzing around us, motorcycles, cars, and so forth. And Chavez sort of chuckled. He said, well, they passed a rule yesterday that we can't march or do anything, make any demonstration in the city of Delano. And so Walter said, well, what do you want to do? And he said, well, there's another warehouse. Let's go down to the other warehouse. We'll get in our cars and go. And Walter said to Chavez, well, how far is it? And he said, well, several blocks. He says, let's march. He said, no, we can't do that. It's against the law. And so they'll arrest us. So they'll arrest us, Walter said. So Chavez says, fine. So we marched. And of course, they're not going to arrest Walter Reuther in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley with the national media there. So we did that. We marched to another place. And so then we got a message from Mayor Loader. I think he was a dentist. And he wanted to meet. So we met in the courthouse in Delano. He wanted to meet Reuther and Chavez and at Leong. And we went and met with him. And he said what a proud city they were. There was no racism or discrimination. Of course, he lied in the courtroom, but he wasn't under oath at that point. But we had this very cordial meeting with him, and he told Walter that maybe the growers would want to meet. Well, the growers had never met with any representative of the FLCIO or the farm workers organization. So we went back to the hall and for dinner, to the Filipino hall, and we got a call saying growers would like to meet, and at a private home. And Walter said to Cesar, well, what about this? He said, well, the growers specifically said I couldn't be there. And so Walter says, well, I won't go. I'm not going to meet without you. And Chavez said, you've got to go. He says, the first kind of chance we've had to find out what's on their minds. And so Walter said, well, on that basis, if you approve of it, I will go. So a group of us went out to this big house. They had adjoining living rooms, if you can believe it, of immense size. And a party was going on, a cocktail party was going on in one room. We sat in this other living room. And so Walter sort of talked to them about organizing is going to be inevitable. All workers in this country were seeking organization, and farm workers needed it most. And tried to persuade them, but they were very rigid about that. They didn't trust Chavez and didn't want to deal with him, and hoped that Walter would leave soon. So we had that. That was the first time we had ever did anything like that. But Chavez was pleased that at least we made those kind of contacts and sort of opened the door a little bit with the growers.
Okay. Now, why was the UAW willing to get behind Cesar and the UFW? What was, succinctly put it, what was the purpose of it?
Well, there are friends of mine in California who are a part of the effort. There are church groups and students supporting the effort, and a few unions, like the Packing House Workers Union. Bud Simonson, then the director, was doing a really good job for packing house workers, but the farm workers who were providing the crops for the packing house workers were unorganized, and he felt that was an effort that ought to be made. And I trusted him, and I trusted Ann Draper, and I just felt that this is something we had to do, and nobody else was really around to give the kind of major help that we could. And Reuther was passionately involved with the idea of organizing farmers. He believed in it through, you know, from the 30s on, because there were efforts over the years to organize. And Chavez seemed to be the kind of leader that understood and was close to farm workers, not some business agent of another union trying to organize among farm workers, but somebody of the farm workers who'd been a farm worker. And you could feel his sincerity and commitment. Chavez was a person who had real strategic ideas and good tactics, and we saw him as a really good person, and why not?
Okay. Now, we keep on hearing about what a good person Chavez was, and saying like all that. I mean, you knew him very, very well. I mean, was he a tough guy? I mean, what was behind there? How could he go up against those growers and do what he did?
He was tough about his commitment to farm workers and their struggle. And he was tough about dealing with growers. But he's also a very soft and decent person on a personal level, maybe shy, I don't know. He felt he was coming from really the bottom of society. and challenging major growers, banks, insurance companies that ran agribusiness in California, politicians who he had not dealt with. And so I think he had some concerns about that. But I never had any concern about that because the way he handled himself with farm workers and with major institutions that were began to support him, he could deal with anybody. And he had great backup from Dolores Huerta, from Larry Itliong, from the lawyers in the group. It seemed to me that he was heading the near-perfect team to really do the job.
Okay. Now, okay, let's go ahead and change the magazine. I'm going to get into Kennedy.
Okay, that's the end of this of Camera Roll 42 and the end of the sound roll. Goodbye. Okay, this is Sound Roll 20 for Fight in the Fields, a Paradigm production. We have minus 8 dB reference time to follow, which equals 0. Okay, we're continuing the interview with Paul Schrade. We're starting Camera Roll 43, and our next take will be take 3.
Marker, take 3.
Now, apparently the UAW and UFW have a deep relationship, kind of philosophical relationship that goes back quite a ways. What was that all about?
Well, before you answer, could you move to your left just a hair?
A hair? What's a hair?
Can you tell us about that relationship between UAW and UFW?
Well, as I have said many times, Walter Reuther was passionately interested in farm worker organizing. And came from a strong socialist family and personal tradition. And I believe that matched where Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta were politically and philosophically. And so it became an easy to-do kind of relationship. It's just a natural flow of things. We had major organization built from the 30s and had an interest in farm worker organizing and had the resources to help out. And so that commitment was easy to make.
But on a more basic level between the workers, were there certain commonality between the...
Yeah, I was criticized a lot in my union as the Western director for being in the anti-war movement, a lot of work in the and the civil rights movement, and my work in the farm workers movement. People complained about that. That I wasn't paying attention to my own work in the OAW, which I was doing, and proved it by getting elected each time. But one of the wonderful things that we found out was that not only are the Hispanic members of our union supporting what we're doing and helping the farm workers, because many of their families had been involved or were still involved in farm work, but a lot of the Anglos in our union had been involved in farm work, because a lot of the membership in the industrial plants of California, auto in our union and aerospace in our union, steel and rubber, came from families who moved out of Oklahoma and Arkansas and Texas during the Dust Bowl days and after, during the Depression, and had known farm work, had known the cruelty of growers and the terrible conditions and the terrible pay. And so they were very supportive because they had knowledge and feelings about this.
Good. Perfect. Now, we're going to shift a little bit here to the Kennedys. You had some personal ties to the Kennedy family and were able to get Bobby Kennedy involved in mm-hmm. Senate hearings. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, the relationship between Reuther and our union and Jack Conway, who worked with Reuther very closely, started, I think, during the McClellan Committee days when our union was being pushed around by the extreme right wing, the religious right, and people like Goldwater and Munt and Nixon and so forth. And during the McClellan Committee hearings, the Kennedys were targeting corrupt unions like the Teamsters and others, but saw us as a model union in terms of our financial structure and how we dealt with the membership and our dues and so forth. And so that relationship built during that period in the late 50s. In 1960, Reuther was a very strong supporter of Jack Kennedy for the presidential nomination. I was living in Detroit at the time, but came back to California to help Robert Kennedy put the California delegation behind Jack Kennedy. So I built a personal relationship on a political basis with Robert Kennedy, and knew him as the kind of tough guy, great organizer that he was. And so we worked with the Kennedy administration. I didn't see much of Jack Kennedy or Bob Kennedy during the 60s, early 60s, but after his brother got killed, it became much closer, because he was searching for his own life, terrible agony over his brother's death and that loss. And part of what Robert Kennedy was doing was going to third world countries. And because of his experience with his brother as attorney general, working in Mississippi and Alabama in the civil rights struggle, he became less the attorney for the United States, but had more important feelings about the civil rights movement, and actually joined the struggle late in as attorney general and after his brother was killed. And I think that made him a prime mover with the farm workers movement, because when he was approached by us to hold an investigation by the Senate Migratory Labor Subcommittee in late 65, nearly early 66, he was quite open to that, and we helped put that together. Reuther, Conway, and Peter Edelman, who worked for Bob Kennedy, were instrumental in putting this Senate committee to come out and investigate working conditions and living conditions of farm workers. And that sort of got him directly involved. But Bob had this sense that he had a mission now, based upon his experience with his brother, based upon his civil rights experience, his relationship with Dr. King, that he ought to be and could be a better representative of poor people in this country and in the third world. And I think that changed him to a great extent and made him really a better political leader than his own brother.
Now, we have seen footage. We know he's been out there. For example, he was out there with Caesar at 68 Fast. I mean, what was going on there?
Well, before the 68 Fast, the end of that, he had been in Delano for the hearings. And during the hearings in the Delano High School in March of 66, he challenged the sheriff and challenged the growers for their treatment of farm workers, and told the sheriff, who didn't understand that mass arrests of strikers wasn't the American way of doing things, that he ought to go out and read the Constitution and Bill of Rights during the lunch break. Well, after that, he went to the Filipino Hall, and I heard him say, "I support your strike against the grape growers. I support your boycott," and went out and marched on the DiGiorgio picket line. And I had never seen any Democrat, much less a Republican, politician do that. You didn't see Lyndon Johnson doing that. You didn't see Hubert Humphrey doing that. You didn't see Eugene McCarthy or Dukakis doing anything like that. He went out there and joined the struggle. And that's why I see him as something special that was happened in our country, and particularly on behalf of the farm workers. And so he went back and got his family into the boycott struggle. He began moving legislation in the Senate on behalf of farm workers where it never had moved before. And it was that kind of effort that he was making that showed his commitment to the struggle.
Not only was it Bobby, but apparently Ethel Kennedy was involved.
Ethel, too, and other members of the family.
Now,
did you want to go to 68
I want to go into the past, but I want to go into Bobby Kennedy. I mean, with Bob, you were there the night that Bobby was killed. What are your recollections, and what were your feelings? What went through your mind when he was shot?
Yeah. Well, I had been involved in the campaign and involved in getting Chavez on the delegation. And based on his going on, I went on the delegation. We both had very difficult problems over that with our leaders, George Meany and Walter Reuther. But anyway, that night, I hadn't planned to go to the hotel because I disliked victory parties. But I heard coming back from San Francisco, coming in from the airport, that we were behind. So I said, well, I've got to be there. This is going to be a disaster. And so I went, and when I got there at the hotel, things had changed. Bob Kennedy was beginning to lead Eugene McCarthy in the California primary. And so I went upstairs to the Kennedy suite and talked to people, and we sat watching the results. And in my discussion with Bob, I got him to put in a call to Walter Reuther, who I just left in San Francisco, to see if we could recruit him, because he wasn't for Robert Kennedy at that point. And we talked about the efforts of the farm workers, because I told him, I said, look, what we did in getting Chavez on the delegation and getting him involved in organizing and recruiting new voters is your margin of difference over Eugene McCarthy. Chavez and the Farm Workers Union organized over 200,000 new voters in California that year, and that gave Kennedy the victory. And it proved not only the political skills of Chavez, but also of Robert Kennedy, that a commitment to a farm worker struggle could give you great political power. And Chavez understood that, and so did Robert Kennedy. And so we tried to find Chavez that night, because as the victory began developing, he wanted Chavez with him on the platform to thank him and the rest of us for what we did in the campaign. And Chavez had left the hotel, and proudly, with a band of farm workers, many of whom had been out organizing in the precincts. And I think one of the things that was said about the campaign was that in both African-American and Hispanic precincts around Los Angeles and the rest of the state, people were lined up at the polls, and these are generally poor people, were lined up at the polls waiting to vote for Robert Kennedy.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll 43 and take 3. We're now going to camera roll 44 and take 4.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
And you're moving to, maybe you can move back up another half a hair.
Half a hair
now. You know how much half a hair is.
Yeah, an inch.
Good, I'm good. Speeding. Rolling. Slate.
Marker, take 4.
Now, you were talking a little bit ago about people lining up in the poll for Bobby Kennedy. Caesars had background in doing voter registration from CSO days. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah, it was a CSO. He was part of the Viva Kennedy campaign for Jack Kennedy in 1960. And so he had this experience, but he also knew the value of it, that you had to get new voters out there in order to create a margin. And that was exactly what happened in the Robert Kennedy campaign in 1968 for the Democratic primary, that the Farm Workers Union under Chavez gave Kennedy the margin over Eugene McCarthy and organizing new voters. And one of the experiences here in Los Angeles and also San Francisco was that in Hispanic precincts and African-American precincts, people, generally poor people, were lined up at the polls to vote, and that had never happened before. And as some members of the Farm Workers Union said, people voted 100% of the registered voters in my precinct, and they all voted for Robert Kennedy. You know, they were saying that with a real pride, and they deserved that.
Now, was the death of Bobby Kennedy, was that a blow for Caesar, for the UFW?
Oh, yes, a blow for the whole country.
What was a blow?
The fact that Robert Kennedy was such a partner of the farm workers' struggle, so involved, was a real blow for the Farm Workers Union when Robert Kennedy was assassinated.
Why?
It was a blow for the whole country. Robert Kennedy was probably the only candidate who could have stopped the war in Vietnam. He was committed to that. And he felt very strongly about that because he and his brother helped us get involved there. And he was the kind of organizer that could do that. After all, he helped save this country and maybe the world in the Cuban Missile Crisis, because as a strategist, he knew that he had to make some sort of an agreement with Khrushchev, and that happened. In the case of the farm workers, Robert Kennedy was important in supporting the struggle when he was a United States senator. But as president, I think farm workers throughout the country would have had an opportunity for the first time to vote democratically for unions that where workers could help themselves to a better life. And he was the hope and the promise.
I'm going to back up a little bit and go to 1968 fast, to Caesar's 68 fast. Was that a turning point for Bobby Kennedy?
It was in this sense, first, that it showed his real commitment, because he came to California just for that occasion. He didn't combine it with other political events or other senatorial work. He came out specifically to support Chavez in the struggle against violence, and that was what the fast is all about. And Chavez, you know, wanted that, although that day he was pretty much out of it, because he was suffering so much from the fast that he was weak and not too coherent. Because when we first went in, where he's lying on this litter in the gas station, the first building at the 40 acres the farm workers built, he introduced me to Robert Kennedy, and later he said, he apologized to me. He said, "Paul, why was I introducing you to Robert Kennedy? You brought him to us, you know." And in his own soft, personal way, you know, he was embarrassed by this, which was absolutely foolish, because he was suffering pretty badly, and this was a major event for the farm workers to have Robert Kennedy there for the end of the fast.
But didn't Bobby at that time also decide on his running for the presidency?
Yeah, Bob, this is probably the largest farm worker rally ever in the history of this country, over 10,000 people there at Delano Park. Bob made a speech and where he showed his support for Chavez and was cheered immensely, particularly when he started reading some of the speech in Spanish and butchering it with his Harvard, Massachusetts accent, and getting lots of laughs, and he laughed a lot. And it was a joyous occasion. And as we left, we had a hell of a time getting him out of there. Crowd just wanted to be with him, and we had to drag him through the crowd and stuff him in the car. And I had felt that the moment was so important that I came back to Delano. I'd been out on the road with a friend of mine, Bud Simonson, the packing house workers, and his wife, going back to L.A., and I said, "We've got to talk to him and about running for president." So I went back to the Delano airport where we'd left them, and Bob was just standing there. Peter Edelman, who worked for him, was on the phone, and so I went up to him and I said, "Bob, with this kind of support, this kind of feeling for you, you've got to run for president. You're the only person that can really help the farm workers. You've just got to be their candidate. You are their candidate. And you can't deny these people the presidency." And so he showed some interest at that point by asking questions about politics of California at that point. And I took that as some sort of interest that he might want to do this. I found out later that he had mentioned to Dolores during the day that he was thinking about running for president. And I found out later, too, that he called Ethel Kennedy back home and said, called Dick Goodwin, a friend of his, who was working for Eugene McCarthy, to tell Dick to tell Gene McCarthy that he was rethinking running for president. So it was a turning point, and I believe that the kind of support that he was getting from the farm workers was the kind of support that he wanted. He could see this as a margin of difference again, of organizing poor people, black and Hispanic, around the country, people who had some feeling and trust for him could be the margin of difference and win the presidency back for us.
Okay. Now, I'm going to shift gears a little bit here. What are your recollections of the DeGeorge strike? Was that a tough time?
It was, particularly when the Teamsters got involved on behalf of DeGiorgio, signing off a contract. And it was crucial that some major effort be made. And so we were able, with a lot of help from a lot of groups, to get Governor Pat Brown to intercede with DeGiorgio to hold a new election with a farm workers union on the ballot. And so he called on the state mediation service to set up a neutral observers kind of election to do that. So that became a rallying point for all the groups supporting the farm workers. And we played a major role in that. We had a meeting. Reuther was on his way to Japan to meet with Japanese trade union leaders, and we met in the motel at San Francisco Airport. Chavez and I went up because Chavez wanted to make a pitch to, you know, get some support. So Reuther said, fine. He said, I'm going to put $50,000 in the Los Angeles bank, and Paul will give it to you as you need it for the campaign, and he'll be quite liberal about it, won't you, Paul? He said, I said, of course. And so we left the room, and Chavez is his own in sort of soft and warm way, says, Reuther has given me confidence. And so we got most of our organizing staff involved. Other unions did, church groups, students, and it became a major effort. We were able to get a group of, you want to stop that?
Let's go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, Monica should be getting that. Anyway, a part of our effort was we went out and got used Ford cars from the Ford Motor Company, get them cheaply, and for traveling around and doing house calls and field visits for the organizers. And that was a good way to do it, because with all those miles and all those big ranch areas, it was helpful that way. But we won that vote, and there was a lot of problems. Teamsters were very aggressive and brutal to some of the organizers, but we won and were able to turn that one around.
Now, talking about brutality of Teamsters and Caesar being in danger, do you recollect that there were some times where Caesar's life was in danger? I heard that there were threats.
Yeah, there were always threats because he was endangering the profit-making capacity of major financial institution growers, banks, and insurance companies in the state. And there was also right wing, you know, Birch Society was against him, extreme right. And there was one incident where an informant for the United States Treasury Department, the alcohol, tobacco, firearms section, and their informant told us that a grower had a contract for $25,000 on Cesar Chavez's life. And the word had been put out. And he knew about it because he was directly involved with the growers at that point as an informant for the Treasury Department. And that concerned a lot of us. In fact, we tried to get...
So the ATF
informant
came to you.
Okay, that's the end of Camera Roll 44, Antique 4.